Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Wednesday afternoon, November the 5th, we are spending the first half hour reflecting on the midterm election results. We just finished a conversation with Brian Brown of Support for Marriage, talking about how marriage played into the election results. We turn to the subject of pro-life issues in the midterm elections. Carol Tobias joins us. She's president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
What was the war on women strategy used by pro-abortion candidates in this midterm election, and did that strategy work?
First, the easy part was it did not work. We had some candidates who thought that if they went into their districts or their states and talked only about abortion and women's rights and women's reproductive rights, which is a code word for abortion, that they were going to win. They thought that was the magic bullet. In Colorado, which is probably the most publicized campaign on the war on women, Senator Mark Udall was talking about the war on women and abortion. And the reporters there even started joking and started calling him Senator Mark Uterus. I mean, because he was running a one-issue campaign. And he went down by a much bigger margin than anyone expected. He was defeated by pro-life Cory Gardner. In Texas, at least the year started out with a lot of the abortion allies thinking that Wendy Davis had a shot at becoming governor of the state of Texas. She was the state legislator who did a long filibuster to stop some pro-life legislation. And she was talking about the war on women, and that didn't work. So now, of course, those who support abortion, and especially their allies in the media, are saying abortion had nothing to do with this election. This was just, you know, midterm election. People didn't like the president. So they had candidates running on the issue, and when it didn't work, then the issue wasn't important.
So there's a bit of revising of recent history on the part of the pundits when it comes to the issue of abortion.
Yes, there is.
So let's talk a little bit about how this was framed and why this is important. It was framed as, by many of these candidates, and I think I agree with you, Carol, they kind of considered this a no-brainer. This was going to win elections for them, especially that governorship in Texas, because the media seemed to depict it as such a popular issue, such an issue that would launch someone's gubernatorial career. Focusing on Texas there, why didn't that work? Why did everyone tell us it was going to basically be the issue that would get her into the governor's mansion, and it wasn't?
It's a way of thinking. There are people in this country who are very active in trying to keep abortion legal, who really think that Americans want abortion to be legal for any reason with no limits. The American public, even those who think abortion should be allowed in some cases or maybe early on in the pregnancy, even those people would say its practice in this country is crazy. We are allowing women to get abortions for any reason during all 9 months of pregnancy. So when those who support abortion think we've got a candidate who's willing to talk about it, they're not understanding that 60-70% of the people in this country don't support that radical position. So they're happy to have candidates talking about the abortion issue, and they don't understand that that's not popular among people. Certainly the pro-lifers don't like it, but even those who think abortion should be legal aren't willing to go that far. The candidates come across as radical and extreme and, quite frankly, very cold and unfeeling because they think a baby 4, 5, 6 months into the pregnancy can be killed. It doesn't work for the candidates when they start talking like that.
What does the shift in governorships, in the House, toward a greater, at least Republican majority, if not pro-life majority, and then the shift in the Senate. What does all of it mean for pro-life legislation in the next 2 years?
Well, we're certainly thrilled with the elections last night. We have a lot of wonderful new pro-life senators coming to Washington. Our pro-life margin in the House has been increased. Unfortunately, we still have a president who is going to issue vetoes. President Obama has made it very clear that he supports abortion with no limits. And I think, you know, Congress is going to try to pass some legislation, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the president veto it. But if they start saying, look, taxpayer dollars aren't going to be used to pay for abortions in Obamacare, babies at least by 20 weeks after fertilization who can feel pain are not going to be killed by abortion. Those are very, I don't know, common sense positions that the American public would support. So when the president starts vetoing that kind of legislation, it's really going to show everyone his true colors, that he really doesn't want any limits whatsoever. So we're going to try, you know, certainly some legislation. I don't know how it's going to go with this president, but we're going to keep moving forward and try to build on our success in 2016.
Do you think that there is the courage of the convictions in both the House and the Senate to get that kind of legislation to the president's desk, if only for his veto?
I think there is. Now, we are not going to see something that would radically challenge Roe v. Wade to say, you know, abortion is not going to be allowed at all. Because right now the Supreme Court is still, you know, is still able to issue the law of the land through Roe v. Wade, but I think we will see some challenges to the president on some things that I would fully expect the court to uphold.
On the subject of the Supreme Court, what do the results of the midterm elections mean for future Supreme Court nominees?
It is going to be much tougher for President Obama to get appointments onto the judicial bench. He's going to have to be more careful in the kind of judge that he does submit. And quite frankly, I'm hoping, I don't know how it's going to turn out, maybe there will be no opening or no vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. But if he does try to nominate someone, I'm certainly going to be hoping that the Senate will not put a pro-abortion judge on that court.
Of course, the scenario that everyone thinks about is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, at least by unofficial reports, has been pressured by pro-abortion forces and pro-gay marriage forces as well to step down and give the president an opportunity to get a nominee in there by hook or crook that would be a suitable replacement for him. Does the president have a very limited window of opportunity if he wants to affect the future of the court here on the issue of abortion, if he wants to secure a pro-abortion slim majority on the court?
He does, and you're right. There have been some people suggesting very strongly that Ruth Bader Ginsburg step down from the court. She is, I don't know, I haven't looked, but she's somewhere around 80, maybe upper 70s. I'm not sure of her exact age, but they would like her to step down so that President Obama could put someone in who is maybe 35 or 40 who would be on the court for another 30 or 40 years. So he would have the opportunity with Harry Reid in control of the Senate for the next 2 months to put someone on, or to nominate someone for the bench. I don't know that that's going to happen because Justice Ginsburg likes her spot and she said she's not going anywhere.
One other thing, as we've kind of intimated here in the course of our conversation, Carol, a Republican majority doesn't necessarily mean a pro-life majority or even a solid pro-life majority. What can be done to increase the pro-life sentiment in the majority party itself, in the Republican Party, that is hardly uniformly pro-life?
The party itself is not uniformly pro-life. There are certainly Republicans who support abortion. Most, I would say an overwhelming majority of the Republicans in Congress are strongly pro-life. They will have 100% voting records with us. All of the new senators that were elected last night are going to be voting with us. The problem is that we still have a Supreme Court blocking any strong legislation to stop abortion, and we have a president who has that veto pen. So we need to just keep working, building the parties, encouraging the Republican Party to remain pro-life. we've got pro-life Democrats in this country, and I would certainly hope that they stand up and start taking a more active role in the Democratic Party to say, look, we just got, you know, smashed last night because our pro-abortion candidates didn't make it. So the Democratic Party needs to start moderating its position, because right now the party says abortion with no limits and taxpayer funding of abortion. So if pro-life Democrats would start getting, you know, making their voice heard within their party, and then, of course, the Republicans encouraging the party to remain pro-life, I think that would make a big difference.
How likely do you think that kind of introspection on the part of the Democratic Party really is for them to actually admit, what would it take for them to admit that abortion may be, in some cases, a loser for them, their support for abortion?
You would see that more on a local level. We have many state legislatures where pro-life Democrats help us pass legislation. It's at the national level where you've got so many groups like Emily's List and NARAL and Planned Parenthood who are just so tight with party leadership that at a national level, it's not going to change for quite a while. It's going to have to come from the ground up with grassroots pro-life Democrats telling their party leaders we're not happy with this change. And even that's going to be a little tougher, because what we used to call Reagan Democrats were the more conservative Democrats who supported Ronald Reagan. Many of them just got tired of the Democratic Party and either, you know, became independents, left the party, or just switched and became Republicans. So there certainly are pro-life Democrats out there, and I don't think you're going to see a change at the top until the grassroots people start complaining loudly.
Given how we started this conversation, you know, the conventional wisdom is that the social issues and abortion really didn't have much to do with this. Given your repudiation of that particular conventional wisdom, what is the lesson that the Republican majority needs to take into the next 2 years, and especially as they think about putting forward a pro-life candidate for the presidency?
They are going to have to do some things in Congress. Like I said, maybe just getting rid of all taxpayer funding in abortion subsidies in Obamacare. Passing some legislation like the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act so that babies after 20 weeks cannot be killed by abortion. They're going to have to do some things. I mean, it's nice for them to say, yep, I'm pro-life, but they are going to have to pass some legislation. And absolutely, their presidential candidate in 2016 is going to have to remain pro-life. If the Republican Party starts backing off on its pro-life convictions, if its elected officials are not passing pro-life legislation, there are too many pro-lifers in the party that will just walk away. They're going to have to do something, and I have no doubt that they will.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. You can check out National Right to Life under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Carol, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Carol will be one of the speakers at the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January the 22nd through the 24th in Washington, D.C. Other speakers at the conference will include Pastor Matt Harrison, Dr. Robert George, and Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. Look for the 2015 Life Conference. It's held in conjunction with the 2015 National March for Life at the National Mall at Washington, D.C. at our website, issuesetc.org. For more information, click on the 2015 LCMS Life Conference logo, issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to turn subjects to the Bible and the translations that sit in front of you. You got an English translation in front of you, don't you? How do you know it's reliable, especially when the person sitting next to you in Bible class has a translation that differs from it? We'll answer some of those questions with Dr. Cameron McKenzie after this.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Ernst Heating and Cooling is a third-generation, family-owned company and has been serving the Metro East for decades. Ernst is a Lennox and GeoComfort geothermal dealer and services all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. Now is the time for your heating system checkup. Whether it's service or maintenance for your existing heating or cooling system or a whole new system, you need to call Ernst Heating and Cooling. Call them at 618-633-2244 or ErnstHeating.com. Ernst Heating and Cooling, Hamel, Illinois.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is the Lord's Day sanctified by man's work or man's rest? I've written an article for the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details former Baptist minister Dennis McFadden's journey to the objectivity of the Lutheran Confession of Faith. The free Issues Etc. journal.
Mount Zion Lutheran Church in Greenfield, Wisconsin, is a congregation of those gathered by the Spirit of the Lord around His saving Word and sacraments. At the center of our life together is the divine service of the risen Jesus, the Lamb of God who was slain, who takes away the sin of the world. If you are in the Milwaukee area, we invite you to share with us in our Lord's gifts of forgiveness and new life. Services are on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 9 a.m. For more information, visit our website at MountZionGreenfield.org.